people always want to know, when did you decide what your specialty was? So I would say I decided to go into internal medicine when I was a third-year clerk during my internal medicine rotation. And then when I went into internal medicine and my PGY 1 year, my program director at the time actually was a hematologist, which is a bit unusual. Usually it's a general internist being a program director for internal medicine, but it was actually a hematologist who to this day is still my mentor. And I actually started on a hematology rotation. It was an inpatient transplant unit. That was back in the dark ages, and we were just starting to do some of these matched unrelated donor transplants, and the patients were really, really sick, and they had multi-organ failure, and I'm a strange person, and I really like that kind of stuff. So I think that sort of sowed the seeds, you know, and that's often how you fall into these subspecialties, is that you have a mentor, and then you have an experience, and then you start to like the patient population. So that was sort of what triggered my interest. And as you, if you speak to any specialist in internal medicine, the subspecialties, you'll find that most of us were interested by a number of specialties in internal medicine. You'll hear, you know, I liked cardiology and nephrology and hematology. There are certain pairings that go together. But that was sort of when I kind of started to really like the subject matter. And so what then made me decide that I really absolutely wanted to do hematology was the fact that it takes the molecular basis of disease and takes it right to the bedside. And I just think that's really, really cool. So, for example, a patient who's coming in with hemolysis, and you guys are going, oh my God, hemolysis, and so what am I doing? I'm looking at the blood film under the microscope, and I'm seeing, you know, whatever's going on. I'm doing the direct antiglobulin test. I'm figuring out if it's immune or non-immune, and then I figure out it's a case of PNH, and I know the molecular defect. It's a deficiency of certain proteins on the surface of the red cells that make them subject to complement lysis. And I know that I can give them a drug that's a monoclonal antibody directed against something in the complement. I mean, that is really cool because I'm giving this patient the drug in clinic, stopping them hemolyzing. The drug is actually triggering something at the molecular level. So that's really fun. And there are not very many specialties where you can actually treat the molecular basis of the disease in real time. Hematology is highly lab-based. So you look at the blood film, you go to the lab, you do a bone marrow aspirate biopsy, you go to the lab and you look at it. As hematologists, we are trained to run the blood banks as well, so there's transfusion medicine in that. And in fact, the first year of your fellowship is spent mostly certifying in competency to run a hematology or a hematopathology lab. So the way you get there is you go to internal medicine, you do 3 years of internal medicine, and then in your PGY 4 year, you have another CARMS match into your subspecialties. And then you usually do 2 years of hematology. And most people who stay in an academic center would then actually go on and do another fellowship. So I actually went on and did another fellowship in thromboembolic disorders. And then I also did a master's in clinical epidemiology because I had my original career track was as a researcher. So I don't know if you want me to speak. I can speak to that as well, because often it morphs into how you become a vice dean or how you become a researcher, and I'm happy to talk about that as well. So that's sort of the nutshell why the subject matter interested me. Patients have malignancies. A big proportion of our patients have hematologic malignancies, and a lot of the hematologic malignancies are curable, so that's extremely rewarding to actually cure a malignancy or have someone go into remission. Very often young, quite healthy patients, which appeals. Equally, it can also be very sad because they are young people who succumb to their disease and die, often, you know, mothers and fathers or younger people. So that's a little bit tricky in terms of the emotional burden. But then if they're not the cancer patients, they're the ones that are bleeding or clotting or have, you know, iron deficiency, something easy. So a day in the life of a hematologist would be a balance between clinical work, so in your clinic, inpatient work or consultative work, and then depending on if you're in an academic center or not, it might be balanced with teaching and research. That's sort of what the mold is. So a day in the week of Forgy is probably not a typical hematologist because I have another job, as you well know. But for example, my clinic that I had yesterday, my hematology clinic, I have a big clinic, so I had about 25 patients. You know, I saw, you know, a lot of undefined anemias that were referred in by family doctors or other specialists. Had a couple of myeloma patients come in for whom I was giving chemotherapy. One was having side effects related to one of the chemotherapeutic agents. Had someone come in with acute renal failure and hypercalcemia. That was a new myeloma diagnosis. Someone who had a bleeding tendency and was presenting with lots of anemia. And we've sorted out probably a von Willebrand's disease. So sort of the whole gamut. And in hematology, you do get, because you can manage some of their malignancies and cure them, you can follow them for a long time, and that's also very appealing. So I have patients that I've been following for 15 years, and they sort of become like old friends, really, in many ways. You've been seeing them every few months for 15 years. I mean, they've been through both of my pregnancies with me, know how old my kids are. And so that's a nice thing about hematology, and maybe that's one of the subspecialties where you really can build up that long-term relationship with patients. Another part of my day as a hematologist would be doing consultative work, and that's why this thing is likely to go off. So we cover the hospitals for hematology consults. So I can be phoned by anybody, the ER, with someone coming in with pancytopenia, NYD, or they're coming in with disseminated intravascular coagulation and they're bleeding. Massive transfusion, as I was saying, we have to run the blood bank as well. So someone that's coming in with polytrauma and they're in a massive transfusion situation and they're asking me for advice about management of blood products. I'll get asked to go to the OR rarely when the surgeons are convinced it's non-surgical bleeding and they think it's a sort of coagulation issue. ICU, we're there a lot. So we're everywhere, and that's kind of fun. The eMERGE, ICU, the wards, the OR. And, of course, tons and tons of outside calls. So physicians calling in. I had someone call from Winchester, someone who's presented with thrombocytopenia and epistaxis. Those kinds of things. There's someone up in Pembroke who's come in with a coagulopathy, NYD, not on any anticoagulants. So that's the sort of kind of thing that I do. In an academic center, as a hematologist, you would be less in the lab unless that's what you really chose to do. So some of my colleagues do go down and read the bone marrow aspirate biopsies. They do go down and read the peripheral blood films, and they spend time in the transfusion or in the blood bank. I don't, because I have other things that I could do. So within hematology, you can also subspecialize, like I did in thromboembolic disease. You could be a bone marrow transplanter, you could be a lymphoma doctor, you can be a myeloma doctor, or you can, like some of my colleagues, be a hematologist in the community where they kind of do it all, but certainly wouldn't be necessarily doing a lot of inpatient consultative stuff. I don't know if that's kind of answered a little bit in a nutshell about what I do. I see. I don't know if you want to take some questions or... No questions? Oh, my God. That's really scary. There's got to be questions. Yes, go ahead.
So how did you come to be...
So when I was a resident here, that's when the Bureau des Affaires Francophones first started, and the person who was running that, Jean Drouin, at the time was a hematologist, and so I started teaching, it was APC at the time, and sort of realized that, you know, this is really fun. I some of you have heard this story, I had one of those moments. I was a first year med student here, and I came up the stairs of RDN, and I'd met my undergrad dean at the time who was long since gone, obviously. And I remember saying, I want her job. So actually, it's something I've wanted ever since day one. And I had a sort of meandering career track, for sure. So I started out as a researcher. I was actually 75% research and was in the world of clinical trials and so forth, but always kept up my teaching. And then I was a program director, Royal College program director for hematology. And then the opportunity for assistant dean for student affairs came up, and I took that job. Really, really loved it, and actually was intending to stay in there for, you know, two mandates, which would be 10 years, and then unexpectedly this job came up, which was a career dream. And I don't know how I did it, but I got the job. I guess I'm the poster child of you can have it all. In that I have, you know, the best job in the world, which is being your vice dean, but I have a great clinical practice. I have kids, I have a husband, I have dogs, I do sports. So, I mean, you can have it all. I don't know if that answered your question. But certainly, you know, the way you become a vice dean, I mean, you just sort of, there's usually stepping stones in various components of leadership. Yes?
You hear for some of the specialties how sometimes there's a lack of demand. What's that like for hematology?
Hematology is pretty, there's lots of jobs. Yeah. I mean, we're because of all the, you know, sub specialization, we're always looking. I mean, we're in sort of semi-permanent recruit mode here.
so lots of jobs. I mean, you know, that changes, and when you get sort of, you know, the career counseling that we provide, you can never sort of predict. And I always say to students, you know, do what you love, because you just don't know where you're going to end up. So you need to be liking what you're doing. And because, as I was saying, you know, there's so much molecular basis of disease in hematology, it's just going, like, it's one of the specialties that's just the most rapidly evolving as we get better with, you know, oncolytic therapy and monoclonal antibody therapy. It's just going to take off. I mean, we're going to be using genomic therapy for things now. So in our specialty, that, you know, the world's just expanding week by week with new drugs, new agents. So, you know, just the demand for our specialty will likely just increase more than decrease, whereas, you know, for example, some of the surgical things with non-invasive surgery, they may be less required. Yes?
You said you made up your mind about internal medicine as a third year quick.
Yes.
Was it like, feel like a eureka moment, or more like...
Yes, I know, and this always causes panic amongst the third years, and go, oh my God, I haven't had a eureka moment, and I was like, not everybody has a eureka moment, many do. Many figure it out through CARMS interviews, like, so don't panic if you haven't had your eureka moment. It was a little bit of that, I have to say. I remember the moment, pretty much, actually. You know, I came onto the ward, I remember the ward even, it was the fifth floor at the Civic campus, and I had a staff person who, you know, you guys all know, there's certain staff people that you guys, oh my God, if you get this person, this can be a nightmare, like, I know that happens, right? I mean, I don't like to know that that happens, but, I mean, you know, hard person, so I got assigned to this position who's notoriously, brutally hard on me. I mean, it's not mean, he's just very demanding. I thought, oh, I'm like shaking in my boots, and he was, you know, grilling me from the second I got on the ward, and in a very perverse kind of sadistic way, I kind of liked the challenging stuff that he was asking. And liked the fact that patients were all really, really sick. There was a million things going on at once. It was very cognitive, I guess, a lot of putting all the different labs and the different systems together. I really liked that. Like, I know, again, that sounds a bit weird, but that's very stimulating to me, and in hematology I get to do that even more because I take lab results and multi-system disease and put it all together. So I don't know if that helps you, but I really like looking after really sick multi-system disease patients, and if I can do that and know what's going on at the molecular and lab level, then that's the perfect marriage of interest for me. Yes? Well, hematology is busy, for sure, because everybody gets anemia or bleeds, or so we're a highly used consultative service, so it's very busy when we're on service, so we tend to do 2 weeks at a time. It's more than 2 weeks in a row, your other jobs and your things sort of fall by the wayside. So, I mean, the demands, I would say, are that it's very busy. They're sick. So some people do die in thrombosis. You know, about 30 to 40% of my patients have terminal malignancy. So it's quite sad. But equally, and this sounds a little bit, maybe, you know, unless you've dealt with a lot of dealing patients, it's actually a very rewarding thing to deal with people that are dying. Largely because they just really reinforce the incredible strength of human spirits. Like the poise and dignity that these people demonstrate when they are facing the most horrific bad news or end-of-life situations, and they maintain their sense of humor, they still worry about family members, they're, you know, and they worry about me. They'll be in my clinic and they'll say, oh, Dr. Porgy, your clinic's huge, you're running around like crazy, are you okay? And, you know, it's so, in a way, refreshing. You know, just when you think the world's all gone bad, you know, and you see some of these patients with unbelievable, like, they just dig deep and they manage this with such grace and poise and dignity. It's truly inspirational. So I often will come home from one of my awful clinics, but this is, you know, particularly bad days where I'm getting awful bad news or whatever. And in a way, it's invigorating. So that would be a stress and a help at the same time, I guess. Well, because in hematology, I can cure things. Not all my patients are dying. Some of them are actually very healthy. I get to follow them for a very long time and get to know them. And again, that whole sort of very much lab-based, sort of scientific, molecular basis of disease that, you know, I would submit is probably the, one of the specialty areas where you can really get a lot of that. So, yes?
So how competitive is that second match up here?
So yeah, I mean, in terms of to pursue hematology. So it's one of the, it's fairly competitive. There are others that are, you know, it depends on your center, right? It's like even BGY1 level depends on where you're going a little bit too. So some, I mean, the Ottawa program is quite a well-known program, so it's quite competitive. You know, how do you position yourself for that? Well, in internal medicine, you know, you certainly want to demonstrate interest in that specialty area. You would do lots of electives in that area, and certainly in an academic center, you would likely want to do some research. So in internal medicine, you actually have the opportunity to research, so you would sort of strategically try and do some hematology research projects, do lots of electives in it, that kind. So not dissimilar to what you do when you're for a PGY1, maybe a little bit less on the research thing. But for the competitive ones, like anything, even for PGY1, you have to demonstrate excellence if you want to get into a competitive program. I don't know if that's answered.
Yeah, no, that research.
Yeah. So, but you can be a hematologist without research. It's just that many residency programs will have some component of research. And I, you know, when I was program director, I mean, for sure I had fellows in hematology that clearly did not want to do research. And I'd say, we just want you to know what the thing is. So just give me a chart review or whatever. I want you to know what it's like to do an abstract and present a poster. But, you know, it was totally acceptable to me as a program director, even though I'm a researcher, but someone would say, you know, I don't want to do it. Yep. No, so you can be a hematologist and not do research. So we have a number of community hematologists here. Dr. Kamisa, who's lectured to you, is a classic example. She was one of my residents, and, you know, would say, you know, Dr. Forgy, I'm really not interested in research, and that's okay. You know, we knew she was destined to be a community practitioner. Yes.
How does hematology practice fit into hematology in an academic center versus in rural medicine? Is there opportunities to practice hematology?
You can be a community hematologist. You'd probably want to be fairly close to a center where you can transfuse someone and give them immune globulin and so forth. So all, even our community hematologists here have medical daycare unit privileges. It would be pretty hard to practice because you got to go somewhere and someone's going to read your bone marrow spread and biopsy. I mean, I guess you could just cross-refer, but like a rural hematologist, that's not going to exist. Most subspecialists, with maybe some exceptions like nephro or whatever, are kind of wedded, at least partially, to a hospital where they can access those. But that doesn't mean they have to work in it. So some people, they just don't want to work in the hospital setting or the academic setting, and that would be like a community hematologist. But, you know, you're not going to be a hematologist on Baffin Island or, yeah. Yes?
Can you speak to some of the interprofessional relationships you build with on hematology?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. So, that's, again, because it's a lot of lab stuff, it's really fun because I get to interact with my hematopathology colleagues. So, you know, and the biochemists and all of the people in the lab, a lot of interaction with the transfusionists. But because hematology is a service that everybody consults, that's what I actually, and I should have mentioned, that's one of the things I love the most, is I'm talking to my urology pals, my vascular surgery buddies, my IV colleagues, so I get to interact with all of the specialists. But also nursing's huge because of all the chemo and the busy inpatient service. We do all the plasmapheresis and all the pheresis in the hospital, so even neuro, where they're getting it for Guillain-Barré, or all the other, you know, pharesis, we're involved in that as well. So there's tons of IP in hematology because of the heavy lab base and multiple specialty areas involved. But I have to say, I really like that because it's fun because these are people I did my residency with, and now they're my colleagues on vascular surgery or urology or ortho, and we're still interacting, but in a professional patient care way. And that's really, really a buzz for you guys when you graduate and your classmates are calling you or you're sharing your patient care. That is tremendously rewarding.
Yes.
Desmond.
How do you find the work-life balance in hematology? I know you also
You know, it's, I always, you know, that's always a, I think it is what you make it to be. I mean, I'm not going to lie to you, there's call involved, and, you know, an internal medicine residency is, there's a fair chunk of work to do, right, because you're doing a lot of internal medicine, you're doing call, and it's, you're talking at five, about 5 years of residency, but as you escalate up the PGY 1, 2, 3, 4, the call becomes less onerous, it's less frequent, you're not even doing in-house call, that kind of stuff. As a staff person, I mean, again, it depends on your center. So if you're in a small center and there's only a few of you, are on call more often. In my call group, I'm on call about 1 in 7 to 1 in 10, and probably about a weekend every 2 months or so. So it's not that bad. And when I'm on call, I get woken up a fair bit, but I almost never have to go in because there's a PGY1, a PGY3, a PGY5, and usually a fellow. There's a whole order of stuff, and because a lot of it's consultative, it's a fair bit of managing on the phone. On the weekends, I would go in and round. So the weekend would probably not be much my own. I would be rounding and seeing patients most of the day, but again, that's only once every couple of months. So in terms of work-life balance, you know, it's doable. You know, it can be busy, and certainly when you're on service, I mean, you know, I'm often home late. When I'm on service, because stuff crops up during the day and you end up rounding late, but it's not an all day, every day. It's not like OB where I'm delivering babies in the middle of the night all the time, or neuro where I'm doing stroke codes and have to go in. It's a little bit less of that. You guys are all decided, oh my god, I never want to do this, so I have no questions. Yes?
Is there anything you dislike about hematology?
I would never give it up. I really love it. You know, and people say, you know, you're in your clinic and Maria Lynn is paging you and you're reading your BlackBerry in between patients, the students emailing and stuff. But it's so awesome doing it. Like, it's so interesting. I mean, obviously, I'm very passionate about it, but like, I'm never, ever bored. It's just really cool. And, you know, even yesterday when I'm crazy busy and I was here till God knows when doing consults, in the moment, it was just fantastic, very interesting, intellectually really challenging, putting stuff together, looking up diagnostic imaging, putting it together with labs, and then being able to really make a huge difference. So I would say there's nothing, in my opinion, nothing bad about hematology. There's never been a moment where I thought, I don't want to do this, I picked the wrong specialty. And I think you would find that with almost all hematologists. We really love what we do. There's sort of no funding issues that we grapple with, sort of no political issues. We have a spectrum of patients from young to old, so it's very diverse, from benign disease to really awful malignant disease. So you get all the stuff. It doesn't get repetitive ever. So I'd say there's no negative stuff. Yes?
You mentioned your UE demo.
So I was pretty much a pretty solid heme keener for most of the time, but I did think I was going to, I was interested in medical oncology because I like end-of-life cancer patients. So I thought about that, but, you know, ruled that out because I did like the benign stuff. What else did I like? I mean, you know, as I said, in internal medicine, you know, it's sort of, when you ask any hematologist, they usually like oncology. I really liked nephro and cardio because I liked the really sick patients. So, you know, I always say to students, and I really believe this, I think we'd all be pretty happy doing anything. Like, I think if I'd been a urologist or a neurosurgeon or what, I would be totally happy, because what makes me happy is looking after patients. And that's, again, as I say to your colleague here, why the whole IPE thing is fine, because, you know, today I've been in the trauma unit, I've, you know, been on the APU unit where they're really stable, I've been at the rehab center, I've been in Emerge, seeing all their stuff and all their world, and it's all good, it's all interesting. So I think, you know, for the fourth years that are grappling about CARMS and thinking they may not get their first choice, which is unlikely to happen, 97% get their first choice. I think most of us would be really happy doing pretty well anything as long as it's patient care. And I truly believe that.